Okay, hey everybody. My name's Stephen Woods. I'm a developer at Flickr. I'm a front-end engineer. That has a lot of different definitions at different places. For us, it means mostly HTML and JavaScript and some PHP. So just before I get started, how many people here are currently building HTML5 or web interfaces on mobile devices? So everybody. Okay, that's good. It's good. I mean, we all feel like we have to do it now. It's what's happening in our industry. Even if you have a great app, you still need to have a mobile website that works, or you might be writing your app in HTML. So why do I feel like I'm qualified to talk about this? I built this at Flickr on top of a lot of other infrastructure. And that's a king cake. You guys had a king cake before Mardi Gras, right? This is a mobile Lightbox experience. It works on a tablet. It works on an iPhone. It's, in my opinion, really nice to use. It's you can swipe back and forth between images. You can pinch and zoom. It's very responsive. It feels, and I hate to use this word, actually, it feels native. I like it a lot, and I think it's a great example of what can be done with these devices that exist today. I'm going to talk about how we made it, but before I want to talk about sort of what I feel like I've learned about mobile development. Now, a lot of you have probably done desktop web development. On the desktop, we're always worried about browsers. We're worried about, will this browser work? Will this browser crash? Will it render the interface? Can IE8 handle anything I throw at it? So you end up with a lot of CSS that looks like this, right? We have to cover every case. We have these horrible Microsoft filters so that IE8 and IE7 still look good. On mobile, I don't feel like you have to worry about that much. We have to worry about devices. On the desktop, everyone's screen is big enough. Everyone's device is fast enough. On mobile, we have to worry about devices because we're running more or less, and this has gotten me into trouble before, basically we're running WebKit, right? There's some other browsers out there. There's very small market penetration. Firefox and Opera Mobile are pretty good at touch interfaces, so they, to me, it's not a big change to just make sure it works in those. Some browsers don't support touch events at all, and we can just forget about them. So back to the task at hand. On mobile, we worry about devices. What that means is that there's a ton of issues that come out of having to support who knows how many devices. Just walking around South by Southwest, you'll see people with Android phones. I've seen people with little crappy feature phones. I've seen people using Blackberries. I see people with Android tablets, with iPads. And we need to support all of them and make them all a good experience. That's the hard problem of mobile development. Now, screen sizes are a big part of this, and I'm not going to go too much into this because I think it's been covered very, very well elsewhere. If you haven't read the Ethan Marcotte, like, responsive design original manifesto, it's a great read, and there's a lot of other talk going on about how do we resolve interfaces that work in multiple, that display properly in multiple screen sizes. What I'm really more concerned about is how do we make interfaces that feel good in multiple interfaces, and feel good is the right word because we're touching them, right? So this is an iPhone 3GS. There are a ton of these out there in the world, and there are also a lot of devices of the same horsepower. It has 256 megabytes of RAM. Its Geekbench score is 271. That's actually what we're talking about. We're talking about an old, slow iMac. So what I've said before is that modern mobile devices are crappy computers with decent video cards. They're slow. They have no memory. Their CPU is performance is abysmal. They have no storage, but they do have really nice video cards, so luckily we can make them work. This is going to change over time, right? Obviously, Moore's Law, we're going to have faster machines, but right now we're dealing with the majority of our users are using the worst computer we've ever had to support. But it's possible to make a great experience. We've all seen them. Hopefully a few of you have created them. It can be done, but you have to do it with caution. I think the first big issue, and this is an issue that's been around for, you know, since the beginning of computers, is perceived performance. How do you make an interface feel like it responds to you? At a talk about 5 years ago, I saw someone mention TiVo. And TiVo's been around for, 10 years now. And the early TiVo devices were incredibly slow. They, you know, it took several minutes for a video to come up. So you would click the show you wanted to watch, and you would wait. But what they did and we all know this from TiVo, is they made that sound, the boop, boop. And that sound, they prioritize that sound. I'm sure that the developers put that sound above everything else. Because the moment you pressed the remote, you got the feedback, you knew the device had heard you and was working. It was immediate feedback. So on desktop browsers, we've been solving this problem for 10 years as well, right? You click, oh, on Flickr, I'm deleting a comment, I'm going to show a little spinner. And that tells me, oh, I heard what you wanted, it's going to take some time, it's coming soon. Touch interfaces are a little more difficult, or a lot more difficult. Now, people of my age, probably, almost all of us, our first experience with touch interfaces was Star Trek The Next Generation. Now, they have an awesome multi-touch thing. And their computer is all multi-touch, and it has been since 1989, apparently. Now, if you remember in the transporter room, Chief O'Brien, when he was teleporting people in, he took three fingers and he swiped. He made a swipe gesture going down because he had three little control dials. And then in the show, and I don't know if they even showed this, but in my mind they definitely did, was the dials moving under his fingers. So he is interacting with it as if he was using a fader. He's swiping with it properly, right? And to me, that is an example of what a touch interface has to be like. It's giving immediate feedback. Chief O'Brien knew that the transporter computer knew what he was asking, and he knew that it was listening to him all the time. He didn't press a button and wait. He didn't slide his fingers and have the sliders follow his fingers 3 inches behind. They were under his fingers. So this is a great tautology, right? Touch interfaces are tactile. But it's true that when you're touching something, you're feeling how it works. You get a much bigger sense that it has a feel of slowness. So what that means is the feedback can't just be a spinner. It has to be continuous information to the user. I'm listening to you. I know what you want. When the interface stops moving, it feels like it died. And I don't know how many, probably all of you have experienced this at some point. You're scrolling down in an app or on a web page, and suddenly the scroll stops. Did the browser crash? Did the app crash? Did I touch it wrong? My wife says that when this happens to her, she thinks that she's doing something wrong with her finger. Like somehow she's gesturing incorrectly. And sometimes, and I've seen multiple apps like this, it means, oh, I'm at the end of my carousel. I'm at the end of my scroll box. And we signal to the user the end by just ignoring everything they asked for after that. So the user doesn't know what to think. This is the whole rationale, and I'm sure that a lot of thought went into this at Apple, for the whole snapback experience and the momentum scroll. On an iPhone, when you scroll down, the native scroll experience, if you hit the bottom of the page, the entire browser pops, shoots up, and because it keeps moving with your finger until you let go, no matter how far you drag. Because that's telling to you, the device is telling you, I hear you, I'm listening to you, I know you're still trying to scroll, but you're at the bottom of the page. That's giving feedback. That's giving continuous, immediate feedback. Another big thing that we're struggling with on mobile right now is convention. Now, for me, this is an interface I've been familiar with for my whole life with computers almost. Close boxes, scroll bars, folders, drag and drop. I know the conventions. So when I build an interface, whatever designer I'm working with, I don't feel confused. I know exactly what people are going to expect. A closed box looks like a closed box. People know. Mobile's new, and the conventions are totally new, but they're definitely emerging quickly. This is one of my favorite examples, slide to unlock. Now, the iPhone has some nice instructional text. It says slide to unlock, so you know what to happen. Now, I just got a Kindle Fire a few months ago. Now, it has a little widget on I didn't think of this at first. But you get the thing, you take it out of the box, you see this, and you go, oh, I'm going to swipe it and unlock it. Because you know the convention now. They don't have to write on there, swipe to unlock. Because it's a convention of interfaces on mobile devices. People expect, when they see some kind of widget, they think, that, oh, I'm supposed to swipe on this. They don't think I'm supposed to click on it, and they don't think I'm supposed to tap on it. They think, ah, this is a slider, I'm going to slide on that. My son, who's almost 2, can unlock my phone. Because he can already figure out this tactile interface. So his generation, people his age, they'll know how to use touch interfaces before they can talk. So an experience I had with this exact issue, it was on our mobile site, m.flickr.com, which we built in 2007, right after the iPhone came out. And constant user feedback was, why can't I pinch to zoom? Why can't I go, oh, I want to pinch, I want to see a bigger photo? And we have a lot of great reasons why you can't do that. But the fundamental fact is that the convention for users is when they see a photo they can't see, they want to pinch and zoom. We were not respecting a convention that had been built in their minds, this is how mobile interfaces work. So backing up from theory, let's talk about how we actually implement it. Now, most of you are familiar with the touch event. The touch event is the foundation of building gesture interfaces. There's really only three things we have to worry about. There's the start of the touch, the move, and the end. Totally easy to understand. You can build everything from this stuff. You get a touches array on devices that support multiple touches. Currently on Android, this has just got one element, or one in the array. On iOS, you get 11 touches. It's left as an exercise to you to figure out what the 11th touch point is for. But there are 11. Now, Android is going to have multiple touch at some point, but the devices that don't support it are going to be out there forever. So we need to remember that you have to support an experience that works for everybody. I'll talk a little bit more about that shortly. And it gives you some other information, position. Sometimes it gives you scale and rotation. Now, iOS has some other events. These are proprietary to iOS, and they are supposed to kind of encapsulate some common gestures in iOS, like swipes and pinches and scales. Do not use them, right? Because you have Android customers, so why are you? Do not even waste your time on this stuff. It seems really convenient for about 10 minutes until you realize that half of your users can't use this stuff. So just don't do it. You can build multiple gestures with just doing the math on your own, and it's not a big deal. It won't make you upset. The best reference for this in the world is iOS Developer Library. You're going to have to do a little bit of thinking to understand what is not supported on mobile WebKit for Android and for Firefox. And Opera Mobile, which is a different beast, but Opera Mobile is trying to implement all this stuff, the touch events, but they have some decent documentation on what they do and do not support. So how do you make these gestures work in the way I'm talking about? How do you make a gesture feel responsive? How do you make a gesture feel natural? For me, number one, prioritize user feedback. That's the most important thing you do during a gesture is tell the user what's happening. Everything else has to stop. You have to use hardware acceleration. What did I say about these devices? They're crappy computers. You can't count on them to move an element across the screen in any performant way. You have to use the graphics card. Next one, this is the toughest one, is manage your memory. 256 megabytes of RAM. And this is shared with the graphics card too, right? There's not like a, in some devices there is, but there's a limited amount of memory space. So the way the browser on a mobile device works when it runs out of memory is it crashes because there's no hard disk to swap to. So prioritizing user feedback, what does that mean? Like I said, don't do anything during a gesture. Stop everything. You can queue events to be handled later. But if you're loading stuff during a gesture, the limited CPU horsepower of that device is going to be occupied doing that while you're trying to tell a user, oh, you're swiping a control. So when you're writing the iTransporter for iPhone, you want to make sure that those dials are moving. And then once you're done with the gesture, you can do all the other stuff. Next one is huge. The DOM is write only. Don't read the DOM unless you really have to, because reading the DOM is not free. It costs computation time. So if you think, oh, I want to figure out where my slider is, you know where your slider is. You told it how far to go. You don't need to ask. Keep track of the numbers. Do the math yourself. And when at all possible, use CSS transitions because they operate in a different thread. So you're not going to be blocking JS execution. So write-only DOM to me has become like a code, like in my brain, I just try and keep this going all the time when I'm working on an interface. Reading the DOM, I think we've gotten lazy on the desktop with feeling like the DOM is a data store that we can write to and read from. The DOM is not optimized for that very well. Especially when you have a limited CPU power, every read has to be, you know, there may be some optimization there, but work has to be done to look into the DOM and figure it out. But you already know where everything is because you put it there. So you can do the math. You can say, oh, I have an element on the screen. I can keep in an object the information about position of the element, and I can always count on that. I can read the position of the element without having to touch the DOM. It's just right there in memory for JS. I use matrix transforms for this because matrix transforms are a really simple way of keeping information about the state, the positional state of an object, and you can read it quickly, and you can do math on it. The other thing about matrix transforms is you can consolidate DOM rights. So if you're like rotating, moving, and scaling an object, you do the calculations on each, write once to the DOM. Sometimes I think that we're insecure a little bit. Maybe this comes from working with so many different browsers, but we're worried that we don't know where everything is on the page. We're worried that we need to double check that, oh, I put this thing there, but I want to really make sure that it's really where I said it was. If it's not where you said it was, you will be able to know what's wrong, especially on these modern browsers. Okay, this is 5 pixels off. It'll be consistently 5 pixels off, and you can write that into your code without checking the DOM. So the swipe gesture is the most basic gesture. People, if you've watched anyone use a mobile phone, or if you yourself have, they'll go to any website, even a desktop website, and they'll see something that looks kind of like a carousel or some kind of control, and they'll start swiping at it. It's just sort of the second nature of how people interact with mobile interfaces. So this is how I do it every time. It's really simple, right? You get the difference between the start and end point. You'd, of course, need to do this for both X and Y. And then you use Translate 3D to move it. Why do I use Translate 3D? Because it's hardware accelerated. Get it off the CPU. Now, another important thing when you're doing this is you need to snap back and forward. This is what I was talking about, the scroll. So you need to keep track of where they have to stop and then snap back to that point when you're done. So if someone's scrolling your interface or if on the mobile lightbox they're swiping an image and I know at a certain point they're not allowed to swipe it anymore, I note somewhere in the code, oh, they hit the edge. This is where we need to snap back to. I store that elsewhere. And then as soon as they stop touching, I snap back. So the snap back is stored up. And the last point is that if the user is gesturing, the element must be moving. That's that same issue with feedback. Don't let anything stop moving. Figure out ways to snap back to where they were. If they've hit the edge of your world, if it's a game or I don't know what you're doing, if they've hit the edge, you need to give them some indication that they hit the edge without the browser just dying on them. So the native iOS uses uses a physics. They have actual momentum that happens. So they do the calculations. It's somewhat expensive to do that. And I've found that just using transitions with easing is good enough for most cases. It gives you enough indication as to what happens without having to do a lot of calculation. Let the browser do that calculation. It happens in another thread for this transition. It looks smooth. You don't really need to make this perfect physics-based momentum scroll because it's going to look just a teeny bit better. But there's going to be a cost in terms of performance. Now, one of the really common interactions we have with mobile devices is scrolling. And a lot of times, most of the time, it's native. And I strongly urge you to, if you can make it native, make it native. Because scrolling is so fundamental that if it's awkward or if it's slow, I'm almost at a loss to words to explain how bad that is. That if the scroll is uneasy or unreliable, people go, oh, this website is slow. This website is crappy. They don't know why, they just know it's not working. So now WebKit has the native WebKit overflow scrolling with some small problems in terms of, in iOS, if you hit the end of the scroll box, the entire page does a snapback rather than just the scroll box. This is the one case I'll say, oh, use a library to simulate momentum scroll, because it's so important to how people interact with the devices. If it's not happening, you know, if you need to some reason your interface requires just a piece of the document to scroll, it's really important that scroll in a native-seeming way, because that is one of the core conventions of these devices. This is really important, and this makes everyone really sad. Don't abstract your events. jQuery Touch, it's really cool. YUI has touch events. They're really cool. Don't ever use them. Because you're adding you're adding something between the interface and what they need to get feedback. You're adding just a little bit of code, or a lot, and you probably don't know how much because you're counting in a library. And you're getting almost nothing for it because all these browsers have the same have the exact same API for touch events. So using an abstraction layer adds complexity, and complexity means CPU and it means bad performance. It's not just for your own personal sanity as a developer, it's for the user's experience. The interface is fine. You can use, if you're using jQuery or you're using YUI or using Dojo to build the structure of your application, there's no reason you have to actually use their event system. You can use your own event system. For mobile, for touch events, in my experience, that tiny delay, that little bitty delay that jQuery Touch adds, comes across as is bad because when you're dealing with a tactile interface, you are so sensitive to how things are being delayed or how performance is being impacted. So that 9-millisecond impact becomes a really tangible, this feels slower. And you don't get much out of it. Use infrastructure, don't use abstraction. Another thing that is out there, YUI definitely does this, I'm not sure if jQuery Touch does this, is support touch events for browsers that don't support touch. So they use click and drag abstraction to build the touch stuff. That's not great, right? That doesn't actually work. Because first of all, there's an API for that, there's touch. Second of all, it's going to be slow, and your users who are on IE9 mobile, who are really the users we're talking about, their experience is going to be crappy no matter what. So adding another layer of crappy to them is probably not going to make them feel better. Sorry if that sounded really down on everybody. jQuery's cool. Pinch to zoom. This is the holy grail, right? Everyone wants pinch to zoom. It's so important, especially for our website, for mobile, for photos. People really, really, really want to pinch and zoom. And people say all the time on Twitter, you'll say, hey, at Flickr, why can't you guys just use native pinch to zoom? Come on, I want to see the photos. You can't, okay? And there's a lot of irritating reasons about this for the user, but from a developer standpoint, it's very clear. You have absolutely no control if you're using native pinch to zoom. There's no information given to you about what's happening. The browser just pinches and zooms. It may fire a resize event. It maybe it won't. It won't tell you anything. Because native pinch to zoom on mobile was designed to help users navigate desktop app websites, to go and zoom in on one div. So when your carefully designed mobile interface gets pinched to zoomed, you cannot figure out what happened to all your stuff. So maybe, I'll use position fixed, right? But that doesn't work because position fixed elements are going to be zoomed as well. So then they just end up sliding around. Okay, well, that might work, or we could try... what about the touch points, the font size? You get into a point where just trying to get it to work with a native pinch to zoom is going to be a fool's errand, especially when you know that HTC devices have their own fake native pinch to zoom, which you have absolutely no insight into. So it turns out that pinch to zoom is not that hard to implement yourself. It sounds really scary, but it's not hard. It takes some math, but not too much, really. It's really not bad. So the first thing is you have to use matrix transforms because a pinch to zoom event, and I'll show you why, is more than just scaling. It's scaling and moving at the same time. If you use matrix transforms, you can scale. You can do the calculation of the scale. You can do the calculation of the move. You can add them together to the same matrix transform and apply them to the element when you're done. One DOM touch. Now, when everyone talks about matrix transforms, they throw up this cartoon. I think it's a great way to look. Most of us look at that and go, I'm pretty sure I get that right, I guess. Yeah, there's a matrix there, and it's a transform. Oh, and it turns on the side. Oh, that's really cute. In fact, you don't really need to know how to do matrix math. It's handy if you want to do some more powerful stuff. If you feel like it or if you know it, use it. It's great. However, for most of us, this is what you need to know. Okay, there's a matrix here, but really, these are the transform, and these are the scale. These are translate, these are scale. You're done. That's all you need to know. And then you can add those things up later. So I can say, if I want to scale and translate at the same time, I can do operations on this matrix, and I don't really need to know what that means. This is the 2D version. In reality, you need to use the 3D version for hyperacceleration. Same rules apply. There's scale and translate. And this is, if you're not doing rotation, which in general you're probably not, this is all you need to know to keep track of the state of an element. Now, this is the element has its normal DOM positioning, and then translate is applied to that afterwards, or the translate and scale from this transforms. But really, all you need to know, you can keep this matrix in a big hash of objects on your page. You know where every object is at all times. You can inspect this because you can read it without reading the DOM. You've stored it for later, and then you can reapply it whenever. So if I want to do, I made a matrix math module for the Lightbox that does some basic multiplication, addition. If you want to do certain things, you need to know the dot product, but for most of this, you don't. The takeaway here is that transforms allow us to keep complex state without reading the DOM again, and without having to overthink it. We don't have to go, I'm going to build an object, and this represents that. And if another developer comes later, they're going to look at this, and they'll know, even if they don't know what these do, they can do a quick search on Google and find out, I know exactly what the other guy was doing. This is a transform. So pinch to zoom. What's happening? What is a pinch to zoom? You determine the center. This is, I'm going to explain it more, but this is a short answer, right? You determine the center of the touch point, figure out the scale, and scale the element by that factor, and then move it by the amount it needs to move. Okay, that's confusing. So this is the naive example. This is an example that is on the iOS developer page. Oh, you have two touch points. You get a scale property. Oh, and you apply it to the element. But if you notice, this totally broke the convention, right? It scaled from the center of the object, and it slid around. It didn't feel like those native pinch-to-zoom experiences that we're used to. The convention of pinch-to-zoom is that the user wants to feel like they're stretching the image or pinching the image, not that they're moving a dial, not that the positioning of their fingers should not affect the scale. It should be pulling on the image. So it turns out it's actually really simple what's happening. Okay. You touch. It scales. Like that. It's really cool. It's totally simple. Now the breakdown of that is we touch and we scale just like we did before. And then we translate afterwards to make sure the center point of the scale was the same. Totally easy, right? Now, the first thought many of you may have is, oh, I can just change the transform origin property. Oh, and then that'll work. And that does not work. And the reason is you have probably encountered this. On high DPI devices, and actually on all mobile devices, we have virtual pixels. We don't have real pixels. You don't address the actual pixel on the page. You address a pixel relative to whatever you said the viewport width was. So by default, there's only 320 pixels across on an iPhone 4S, even though there are a lot more pixels there. So when you move the transform origin, you can only move it by however many pixels are natively in that element, or not even natively, in that element when it was drawn to the page. So if you scale up the element and then you move the transform origin, you're going to have these rounding errors are going to compound because the actual pixels are going to, there's going to be more actual pixels for each virtual pixel. So the experience will be that things will start to slide around like crazy because the rounding errors are compounding. So you don't do that. You just do this. Now, this is the magic equation, and I have some code, and I keep meaning to clean it up and put it on GitHub, and I'll do it soon for the pinch to zoom stuff I wrote called Mr. Pinchy. This is it. You have the numbers you need. You can find out based on the width, based on how much you've scaled, and based on the position of the center point of the scale, the gesture. You can move the element as much as you need to move it to make sure that center point stays in the center. You don't need to do any tricks. I guess the takeaway for me with this whole experience is every time your instinct is to try and avoid doing the math, I think as developers and as programmers, we surprisingly hate doing math, right? Like we gravitate right away to how can I avoid actually doing any calculations here? In this case, it seems that if you just do the math, you're going to be happier in the long run. Because you're going to get the actual data that you need. You're going to get the actual values you want. So, like Nintendo Power, pro tips. Beware of the virtual pixels. Moving the transform origin won't really work, and remember to snap back. I didn't mention that with pinch to zoom, but pinch to zoom is no different than anything else, right? If you hit the maximum scale, I should still be able to keep pinching. It shouldn't just stop moving when I've hit that maximum scale. So you grow and grow and grow past the point, and when I let go, you snap it right back. And because you have that matrix transform saved up, you can just apply that transform back to it, and if you have a CSS transition applied to the element, it just happens. It just goes magically like that. Now, I kind of said there weren't a lot of browsers to worry about, and it's not really true, not to refute my own point. CSS rendering, which is something that we used to worry about all the time in browsers, and we still do on the desktop, oh, will this look different on this browser or that browser? It's not really a big issue. But the browser issues on mobile devices are more to do with browser capability. It's the most obvious one is the touch event support. IE9, of course, does not support touch events. Some Opera versions don't, and Opera versions don't necessarily get updated, especially if they're feature phones that came with Opera Mini on it. There's people who get their Android phone out of the box, and it's Android 2.0 or something really old, and they don't know how or don't care to update. So how do you deal with that? What do you do if you've got browsers out there that are that don't support the cool stuff you want to do? Now, we always used to have a solution to that, right? Progressive enhancement. Now, progressive enhancement historically has been, oh, make sure there's a non-JavaScript fallback. Make sure if they click on that, it still works. Now, in this landscape, we know that JavaScript is there. We should still probably have a fallback of some kind, but it is there. But what might not be there is transitions, or maybe the devices are too slow, or maybe the touch doesn't work right, or maybe it's HTC and they have their fake pitch to Zoom, which ruins everything. So you could do progressive enhancement the same way you did before, and it's about saying, okay, if they don't have a touch, if they can't support swipes, if the transitions are too slow, make sure it still works. So I believe that swiping and having no feedback is not a great experience, but it's better than no swipe. So on really old HTC phones, or not HTC phones, Android phones for the mobile light box, you swipe and the element moves. There is no feedback because the performance was unacceptable. Because that's better. So I have a fallback. I have a way of making sure that things still work. On the tablets, we have buttons that go next and previous. Because some tablets, especially less now, but your older Galaxy Tab didn't support touch events properly. So you had to make sure if people were going to use a Galaxy Tab and use our Lightbox, they had to have some buttons to press because swiping wasn't even going to work. So progressive enhancement is pretty simple, right? You feature detect. If the feature's not there, you have some kind of fallback. You add transitions with CSS, but you don't depend on them. So don't have an on-transition end listener that if it's never fired, the interface won't work. So gesture interaction becomes an enhancement. The clicks are still going to work. People can still use it if they have, you know, on Windows Mobile, your finger is a fake mouse. It's not a touch gesture. It's just like clicking around. So clicks should still work. I don't think you should fake a swipe, but I think you should at least make sure that anyone on any device can use your app. The older phones, the feature phones, aren't going to support any of this. At Flickr, we have a complete fallback mobile application that we wrote way back when, so that feature phone people can still access our site. But it's important to think of what will happen if someone comes to my mobile site and they're on 2005 version of Opera Mini. How do I make sure that they still see content? The other thing that I've developed, and this is really bad, but it actually has to be done. Disable features per user agent. Now, user agent sniffing, we all know you're not supposed to do that. But we all live in a real world, and you have to do that. So you find out, and we found this out, sometimes device manufacturers approach us directly and say, hey, on Nokia, this version of Nokia phone, your app explodes. Or touch gestures work so badly on this particular device, they need to be disabled. So we have a way of making sure that features are disabled on a per user agent basis. At Flickr, we've built a library where we have a black list of user agents and a gray list of user agents and a white list of user agents, just to make sure that people on crappy user agents still can use the site. The point is not to hide things from them or to enhance based on user agent. The idea is to make sure that people come with old user agents, there's still something for them to see. So people ask a lot about what's the tool chain, like how do we develop mobile apps? Is there, you know, on the desktop it's easy. We've got Firebug, we've got a million other great TextMate bundles that do what we want, or we use Coda and we have everything we ever wanted. So for me, the tool I use the most is the dumbest thing that works, using WebKit browser with user agent spoofing. I can do a lot of development here. I can't work with gestures, but I can lay out the stuff and I know it's going to be close to where I start. It's a place to start before I start going into debugging. Because it's so slow to go between device and desktop, especially if you have, which we have, SSL type certificates. So if you try and sign in, you have to go through a whole signing process. This works great. I mean, for most development for mobile devices, this is going to do the job. Another excellent tool is Winery or Wiener. I kind of call it Wiener, but Winery is what it's supposed to be called. It's a remote WebKit debugger. It's amazing. You can use the WebKit dev tools from your browser on your desktop while you're interacting with a device on your lap or next to you. It's a great tool. It's an amazing way to try and debug what's happening. You can get console logs. You can do the same things you would do with regular WebKit developer tools. Another tool I find really useful is Charles Proxy. So I proxy through my desktop, and I can watch HTTP traffic from the device, add breakpoints and AJAX requests, and see what's happening not from the interface standpoint, but from the communication with the server standpoint. It's really nice. I thoroughly recommend that you do this. It's an amazing way to debug problems that are sometimes really hard to track down. Like, why am I not getting an AJAX response? How do I make sure it's not the server who's broken? There's a new tool that just came out, Adobe Shadow, and it is really a great tool. It allows you to remote control the browser from your desktop, which I love, because you can sit there and develop and click buttons and navigate and see things actually happen. It works on Android and it works on iOS. Unfortunately, I cannot use it because it doesn't support invalid SSL certs. So if any of you work on this product, it needs to support invalid SSL certs, because who gets a valid SSL cert for their dev environment? The best debugging thing, and thankfully our management has been helpful at getting this, is the pile of devices. These are the devices that we currently have in our office, plus more. The more the merrier. If some friend of yours is like, oh, I have a crappy old Android phone, I'm getting rid of it, just say, oh, I'll take that. And you put it in your drawer, and it's going to come in really handy someday. You want to, because the only way, when we're dealing with mobile interfaces, especially when you're talking about hardware acceleration, the number one way to figure out if you run out of memory and hardware is that the browser crashes. So you can't test that on the desktop. You certainly can't test it if you don't have the device in hand. So you really want to have some horrible old devices that have great market penetration. I love testing on an iPad 1, because an iPad 1 is on the slow side. It's low on memory. So I know if the interface works pretty well on iPad 1, it's going to work excellent on iPad 2 and iPad Next or whatever it's called. So I have a 3G. 3Gs are terrible now. They're so slow, but it's really nice to have, because there are a lot out there. Same with these other Android devices. And the Motorola Zoom I don't like it, but it's great to have a way to test so that the few people who are out there using Android tablets today, I can see what it's like. And the Kindle Fire, of course, I'm shocked by how well this device performs, by the way. The Kindle Fire, I got one in the office to make sure that our light box worked, and it just worked. I figured with the Silk browser and everything, it would be problematic. No, it worked great. Now, there's something that people like to talk about a lot, which is device emulators and emulators. They're useless. For web development, they're useless. For developing apps, that's what they're made for. People who develop apps, right? They're made to build and run. For web development, they don't work. You can't trust them. And if you can't trust your development environment, it's worthless. So I have had CSS styles that were wrong. In the emulator, they'd have behaved wrong. JavaScript APIs that didn't work the way they were supposed to. The OS is out of date. I'm not going to use that. The incremental piece of a little is wrong. It's a lot easier to use it, right? Because it's on your desktop. It's right next. You've got TextMate here. You've got your emulator here or simulator here, and you can just watch it happen. It's just, I can't count on it. You can't use it. With Android, their emulator doesn't work because Android devices are so fragmented that you can't trust the Google gold standard of what Android is supposed to be like. Now, in theory, with Ice Cream Sandwich, this fragmentation is going to go away. But how many people do you know? If you know people who are using older Android phones, do you think they're going to run out and upgrade to Ice Cream Sandwich? And if they come to you and your website and say, hey, your web app doesn't really work on my phone, they really don't want you to hear it. Well, get a new phone, dude. So let's talk about what we did. This is I'd like to kind of explain like the story of how we built this Lightbox. It came from it's been a while now. Almost 3 years ago or 2 years ago, we built a Lightbox for a desktop, which is a great way to see the photo in isolation on black. And a lot of people, myself included, who had iPads, really wanted to use that on our iPads. But it wasn't very fast, and it wasn't very native. I couldn't swipe. In fact, I knew it wouldn't swipe, but I still wanted to try and swipe. So there was a huge, and you think about an iPad, talk about a great way to experience photos. You can just swipe through and look at them. Everyone loves using a native app. So we built this. We only have cat pictures on Flickr, by the way. It's all we serve, so I wanted to make sure that you saw that. This is a keynote animation, but if you use it on your real device, you'll see that it is fast like that. It does perform this well. It feels natural. You're swiping through. So we built it in the most obvious way. The DOM layout is simple. There's three nodes. If you've built a carousel before, you've built it roughly this way. When the Lightbox opens, we completely nuke the existing DOM on the page in favor of making sure the Lightbox opens fast and performs quickly at the cost of it being slow to close. we create the bare minimum number of DOM nodes. Because remember, I'm worried about memory. So if there's a huge complex DOM tree, it's a lot of memory that I have to worry about. And that's going to slow down the evaluation of the DOM when I'm trying to inspect it and find things about it. The images are divs. Now, the reason for this is that the current browsers render divs and hardware acceleration much, much faster than image tags. I don't know why, but it's true. So if you find that your images are moving slowly on your device, use divs with a background image, and you will find that, shockingly, the performance improves a lot. Now, one concern about this, using divs for images, right, is the accessibility issue. Hopefully most of you know this, but some of you may not. Mobile devices are incredibly popular with users who are vision impaired or blind because they actually are great for those people. They're really easy to use. They have a really great experience. So if you use divs instead of images, they don't know there's images on the page. Luckily, we have Aria now. These have Aria roll image on them. We had, the people at Yahoo who do accessibility were really, they weren't pleased at first, but they came to us and explained to us how we could do this. So accessibility concerns are really not there with the div. The only thing that you might be concerned about is that you're not semantically correct, which is okay. Now, note that there's buttons at the top. Those buttons are really important, right? Those are what I was talking about. For people who can't swipe, they still want to use this thing. So the swiping process is really simple. There's an event listener at the top of the page that listens to all touch events. Only visible nodes move. This seems obvious, but it took me a while to get there. So if you can't see it, just stop moving. As soon as that node is outside of the viewport, I just drop it, let it go. Because again, I wanted to do as little as possible, prioritizing user feedback above all. The rebuild, translate 3D, of course, the rebuild only happens when the people stop gesturing, right? So there's a lot of work to do when you go to a new slide. So you slide to the new slide, but at that point, it's impossible for the user to go to another slide without stopping the gesture. So at that moment, I have my window to build the next slide, start fetching new images, and do all the work, and make sure that I'm not doing the work when the swipe happens. Now, currently, there is a little bit of work that happens during gestures of image loading. I don't think it's great, especially on slower devices, but I have decided it was slightly better than the experience of... It seems that users, especially with slower retina size images, users do want to see that the image is coming in. However, it wouldn't be difficult to, say, have a semaphore that says, gesture happening, stop all execution. And for a lot of the work that happens here, the building of new nodes and things like that, there is an easy check. So I can, in the code, it says, is there a gesture happening? Don't do anything. So anytime I have a calculation that might have been set with a set timeout, I make sure that there's no gesture running so that I don't cause any kind of blocking. Some of the other performance tricks that we use is aggressive pruning. Again, right, talking about memory. Memory is one of the big limiting factors on these devices, so you need to clear things out as fast as possible. If you have enough information about what was there, you can rebuild it when you need it. And so that's what we do on this, is that for older positions in the of slides, older elements, I've got the information in a big hash that tells me what should have been there, so I can rebuild it without going back to the server, but I clear it out as soon as possible. DOM writes basically happen once, and then reads never happen after the first initial we built the page. And from then on, I know where everything is, and I never check, and do as little as possible during swipes. And, I mean, I can't mention this enough. We get used to this idea that when people ask for something, we should just start working. We should just start getting that work done. But people haven't asked for something until they're done gesturing. So, again, if you're gesturing, do nothing. So we found some frustrating limitations here. Retina screen is huge, device memory is small. This is a big one. It doesn't take much to kill a browser. And it doesn't die gracefully. It just crashes and dies. And there's nothing worse for the user than a browser that just crashed. They come to your website and it just crashed. So we just had to be very, very, very sensitive about how many images were currently loaded, how big of an image can we download. One frustration I have with our current pinch to zoom experience is that the maximum resolution is not that big on a Retina device. But unfortunately, the Retina devices currently, but I believe the next one coming next week, will be able to handle the much bigger image. And then we'll be able to do it. Ideally, we would tile images, but we don't have the infrastructure for that at the moment. Yeah, hardware acceleration. It just crashes. That's your debugging information. Your debug information is browser crashed. Go back. I keep meaning to ask this on the WebKit bug tracker. I want, for the WebKit inspector, I want an information about how much texture memory is being used by the graphics card so that I know when that's happening. When am I starting to fill it up? How much space is there really? Are my images being downsampled? Another thing that OpenGL does is it does automatic culling of things that are not in the viewport necessarily. So if an image is off screen, it's possible that the device will decide, oh, well, we need to cull this face. So we're going to unload the textures and we're going to hide the face. And then the device is slow enough that when it comes back into view, you will see those 256 pixel square texture tiles come back in, which looks really weird. This last one has been really frustrating on mobile development. I imagine that most of you have encountered this. That the Android and the mobile WebKit, all these mobile browsers have tried really hard to make sure the web works in their devices. So if you have a crappy desktop site, it works. But if you know what you're doing, you're going to be fighting against those automatic optimizations all the time. One of them is the double automatic image downsampling. So I don't remember how this works on Android, but on Apple, if it's over 2048, it gets downsampled to 1024. And I know why they do it. They don't want to crash the device. But they don't tell you when they're doing it. You don't get any API to say, oh, did this image get downsampled? It just happened. The image just got blurry, and you have no feedback as to why. And that even happens on the OpenGL, that you will, at some point, it will decide that that texture map needs to be downsampled, and it will just happen. And there's no insight into why or when, and you can't double check to make sure it hasn't happened. The way I got around that on the Lightbox, which was this OpenGL downsampling that would happen from time to time, is I would clean off the 3D transforms as soon as they were done. So I would say, okay, get rid of 3D transformers, apply a 2D transform, and then that would force the device to go back and re-render it from the original source without going to whatever was in texture memory. But again, that feels like a hack. I feel like I really should be able to say, hey, WebKit, did you downsample this image? Or hey, WebKit, are you out of texture memory? Can I put more in? And I don't know. I don't know what the API for that would look like, but I would really love to have some sort of insight into what is really happening. So that's all I had. Here's the image credits. There's a Flickr photo set if you really want to see them all. This talk is on SlideShare. And that's the whole story. Are there questions? If you have a question, they asked me to tell you to come up to the mic.
Hello.
Hey.
You had mentioned PhoneGap once earlier on in the presentation as being a layer in between the code and the actual device itself, and then showed something around Whiny, which was in the PhoneGap GitHub. How do you see technologies like PhoneGap or Sencha, or there's a countless number of others to do cross-device coding?
PhoneGap is awesome.
Okay.
PhoneGap is really awesome. But PhoneGap, everything I talked about here applies to PhoneGap.
Okay.
Because PhoneGap is a wrapper around, for the most part, WebKit. Maybe it'll be more at some point. But it's still just the browser. So one of the things that happens with WebKit with PhoneGap apps versus native apps is that it's a little bit harder to make them perform and act like a native app because you're dealing with the same browser limitations that you would be before. So you're going to have to use Pinch to Zoom the way I did it. You're not going to be able to count a native. But it is a really awesome tool. And we've explored using it for different things, and we haven't yet, but it's a really excellent tool. I can't remember, but yeah, I love it.
How do you feel about Sencha?
Sencha, so I've known Aditya, who works over there, for a long time, and I haven't personally used it. It sounds, you know, just from the top of my head, it sounds kind of excessive to me based on how much abstraction there is. But I think if they can do a good job on it, it's not a bad idea, especially for people who are trying to build enterprise apps, who really need to build a very robust app quickly. I think it's valuable to have some sort of framework to build a nice touch experience. So I think it's a good idea. I just hope that it works.
Thanks, Stephen.
Hi. Quick clarification and then a question. When you're talking about hardware acceleration, mm-hmm. On Android, pre-Ice Cream Sandwich for mm-hmm. HTML5, like, what are you talking about?
What?
On Android, without Ice Cream Sandwich, are you talking about, like, writing OpenGL?
I'm talking about, Translate 3D. And I believe on most of those devices, it's not actually hardware accelerated.
Right.
But it is, you can act like it is. It's still happening in a separate thread.
Yeah, okay.
So it doesn't, again, it doesn't actually benefit you in terms of performance versus the iPhone thing. But you don't have to, it's better to probably not fork your code. And you don't get any benefit from using Translate 2D versus 3D. So.
Right. Yeah. No, I just, the Galaxy tab, like you could just tell.
Yeah.
And the question was, on your Lightbox example, when you're talking about, you know, what you're trying to minimize and mm-hmm. as the gesture is going on, and there's only a certain number of nodes that you have there. Did you build like a display buffer for that? How do you manage the transition if you're swiping through like 40 images?
So it happened. Luckily, I have basically a queue of. We've built infrastructure at Flickr that supports like a list of images that are ready to go. So I have all the information I need to build quickly. So there's not a display buffer because that's going to fill up the same memory that the DOM is. But it's surprisingly quick to rebuild one of these elements. They're very lightweight. There's really like five or six, or it's more like 15 elements, I think, per slide. But as soon as you, that there's a pause there, and this is, we've actually built in a pause. We don't allow you to, you have to stop before you can go to the next one. So that gives us that second to rebuild it.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
He just did part of my question. The follow-up then to that is, when you're pulling in images constantly, how do you deallocate the image from the DOM?
So
using all your memory, someone's just...
We destroyed the node.
Okay.
So the node is destroyed. You can't explicitly say, if you have this image cached, destroy it.
Okay. That's a question. I was like, can you actually do that? Or no?
No, you can't.
Okay.
But at that point, you have to trust the GC to work. But as long as you destroy the element, it helps a lot. Because the element's the big cost.
By destroying the element, you mean remove it from...
Yeah, and I'm guessing that the browser moves the image into somewhere that's a little slower to access.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi. Just a quick question. As far as I understood, you mentioned that you can get 11 touches when you bind to the touch events on iOS.
Yep.
And only one on Android.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you cannot do pinch and zoom?
That's correct, except for Ice Cream Sandwich.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Ice Cream Sandwich is going to have multi-touches. I don't know how many touch points. Maybe they'll have 12, so they're better. But they currently, yeah, you cannot do pinch to zoom on iOS. HTC has implemented their own pinch to zoom, but we have you only get one touch event, so you really can't use it.
Cool. Thanks.
You're welcome. Anything else? Thanks, everyone who came. It was good to see you.